Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Real Roundtable. I guess that's the new name now. Where we talk about the last Game Nights episode. And of course, we are joined by our wonderful guests from Game Nights Double Masters. On our left, we have Ashlyn Rose.
Hello.
And to our right, rising superstar, Joseph Johnson, a.k.a. Joe.
Hey.
Before we get into it, we're going to plug your socials down below, but you can find Ashlyn at Ashlyn Rose and Joe at Black Nito. So make sure you guys check them out as well after the show.
All right, so as with every roundtable episode, our goal is to tackle the most commented on, the most controversial moments from the latest episode of Game Nights, the Double Masters episode. Quick thing here. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler.
There's no way to do shows like these without spoiling the episode. So if you have not watched the Double Masters episode of Game Nights, you should push pause right now. Go watch the episode. And then come back.
Open a new tab, too, so you keep your place.
There you go. Very helpful. Yeah, you definitely want the context of having watched the episode before we start talking about it.
And very specifically, too, we are talking about a lot of stuff. No one that asks these questions is, we're not calling you dumb. We're not saying that you missed something. Maybe you did miss something. A lot of times, like Josh has said before, if something happened and everyone's like, why did this happen? It's actually kind of on us a little bit as the filmmakers and the editors to make sure that, oh, maybe we didn't convey that information correctly. So we'll be clearing up a lot today.
All right. Having said that, let's start with the single most commented on thing. Further Fetchland confusion, Jimmy.
I am Craig Blanchett.
Are we cheating again with Fetchland?
Absolutely not.
Okay, hold on. Let's play the clip here.
I'm going to play the top card in my library. It is Rakdos the Showstopper.
No!
That's not cool.
Yikes.
I'm going to pay 6 life to do so. So I'm going to go down to 4 life.
Ooh.
Classic Jimmy Wong tactics here, guys.
Living dangerous.
And are you going to pay 1 for Ristic?
Yep, I will pay for Ristic Study.
All right, so what gives? In that clip, we see you, Jimmy, tapping an Arid Mesa to pay for Ristic Study. What the heck?
I think it's fair that you can use any land to pay for Ristic Study. That's really... No, I have a card called Chromatic Lantern in my deck, and this card allows all of your lands to become multicolored. Tap for any color of mana lands. That means you can turn your fetch land, you can turn your Urborgs into lands that tap for other colors of mana. You can turn all sorts of crazy things into mana tapping lands. So that's basically it.
Yeah, you don't have to crack it and fetch it. You can just tap it.
Yep.
Chromatic Lantern was on the board.
Yeah.
Easy to miss. Again, something we didn't bring up in the moment. And I'll confess, we debated it in the editing booth. Jake, who's sitting just off camera, one of our editors on Game Nights, was like, hey, should we explain the Chromatic Lantern thing? And I was like, most people probably won't notice.
Yeah.
It's just going to take up time for no reason. Let's not do that.
But they did.
They did. Yep.
Oh, they definitely noticed. It's that was bad call. That's what we call a bad call, Josh.
That's one of the cards that we talked about, I would say, like every other episode when we first started out. So maybe we had in our heads that everyone knew what it was and what it did. Guess not.
All right. The next question a lot of people had was, Joe, when you play Macias,
right?
Macias has an ability that, honestly, like, doesn't tend to come up too much in most games. And people were... It's that whenever
a human...
Yeah, do you want to read it?
Yeah, whenever a human deals damage to you, destroy it. And then there's a book of text around that. But that's the one we're talking about, this little bit here.
So you point out when you play it. In fact, we have a clip here. Let's play the clip.
Okay. I'm going to cast Macias, the Unhallowed.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good card.
I can't attack you with Kalia anymore.
You can't attack me with Kalia.
Oh, she's a human?
Yep, she's a human. Oh, it seems as if Kali is a human. So me playing Micaius means you can't swing at me, Jimmy. You can't. Because you're going to sacrifice the creature, and you don't want to do that. Checkmate. Well, maybe like check, not mate. He ain't dead yet, but check.
So Kalia is a human.
Yep.
Sad.
But a lot of people were like, well, Kalia is going to have lightning greaves on when it hit, if and when you swung at Joe.
Right.
So shouldn't Shroud protect against that? I don't know. Do you want to tackle how Shroud works, Joe?
Well, Shroud targets or eliminates the target, but
right.
the active ability on Micaius will trigger no matter what when the damage is dealt.
Right. So yeah. It doesn't say target. It doesn't right. say destroy target
creature.
Right. Human.
Human, yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't target at all, so Shroud doesn't stop it.
Yeah, the text would look weird, too. Whenever a human deals damage to you, destroy target human that dealt damage to you in this way. Like, it is a lot. So the word it here replaces what's happening. It's something that just happens. It doesn't matter if Shroud is on the creature.
Indeed.
All right, so the next headline is Joe almost wins. So some people noticed this. There's a moment in the game, and, well, again, we have a clip for it, so let's play the clip.
So Joe's deck is telling, so far, a very clear story. Phyrexian Altar lets him sacrifice creatures. Cruel Celebrant lets him turn creatures dying into damage. And now Micaius brings those creatures back so he can sacrifice them even more. I think he's probably only like one piece away from having maybe not an infinite combo, but some real, real scary synergy that can kill us all pretty quickly. I don't like what's going on over there at all.
So Joe, you have Cruel Celebrant.
Yep.
You have Phyrexian Altar.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Micaius out. And I'm very nervous about it, but actually I'm not even as nervous as I should have been because I didn't even see the combo or the possibility here. Do you want to walk through? You actually had the ability to win on the next turn. I happened to Toxic Deluge just out of general fear, but not specifically because I knew you could win, but you actually could have won on the next turn. Do you want to walk through how that was going to work?
So... Vishkal's ability allows me to sack a creature and take their counters off of them. So with that loop, I could keep sacking the Cruel Celebrant or whatever creature to Micaius. Micaius' ability would bring it back with the counter. I could sack it to Vishkal, taking the counters off, then thus bringing the creature back with counters that I could just keep doing over and over again and wiping everyone's life total and making my life total really, really big.
Yeah, specifically Vishkal, you could sack itself to itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to remove the counters from it,
right.
to give something -1/-1, and then it will come back because when it dies, it doesn't have a counter now.
A counter, yeah.
Comes
yeah.
back. Cruel Celebrant says, hey, you died. Yeah, you Let's died. Deal yeah. damage to everybody. Boom, and then boom, it boom. Comes back with a counter because Micaius can go, I'm going to remove that counter and give something -1/-1. And then it dies and it comes back. And Cruel Celebrant says, hey, cheers.
Yeah. Here's to you.
Yeah,
exactly how Cruel Celebrant sounds.
The key here is that it's undying on Micaius, not persist. So it comes back with a +1/+1 counter. So when you have that plus the undying trigger, it's gonna come back and then Vishkal again likes +1/+1 counters.
And can remove them.
And can yeah. remove them, and you have many ways to sack and gain mana, as well as, you know, Vishkal can just sack himself.
Yeah, that's the thing. You just sack. What would end up happening is I sack Vishkal infinite amount of times, right. Cruel Celebrant infinite amount of damage, you all die.
Yep.
Sad. And yeah, infinite mana.
We didn't realize how close to the edge yeah. of the cliff we were.
I think we were already worried enough about Jimmy yep. to like not even focus on Joe's board at the time.
I mean, I was like, that. There's something bad that's going to happen. I remember, I think I actually asked you in the moment, like, do you have Triskelion in your deck?
Yeah, you did.
Like, right, exactly did it, yeah. how worried should I be? And then, oh yeah, I made you discard with the Sword of Feast of Ammon, and you discarded a tutor. And I was like, yeah. whatever the other card is...
is nuts.
Good chance it just kills all of us, so I have to kill Micaius.
Yeah. Related to this, later on, Josh, why didn't you have this combo? You had Vishkal on your board, right?
Oh yeah, that's a really good point. A lot of people asked, because I had Vishkal and Micaius myself at one point, mm-hmm. and everybody's like, why didn't Josh pull off the combo? The problem is the Scarab God makes token copies of the creatures. So I couldn't sack my Vishkal to itself.
Right.
It wouldn't disappear.
Yeah, because it's a token, it would hit the graveyard and disappear, wouldn't get the undying and come back. So I couldn't pull off the combo. Yeah. Yeah, forgot about that. A lot of people asking about tokens. Yes, tokens do hit the graveyard and do trigger dies abilities. Everybody look that up. I feel like we answer that question constantly.
Yep.
Okay, let's talk about
Pro colors.
Protection from how it works. There's a lot of confusion. You're right. So a lot of people said, hey, Josh, Toxic Deluge is to get rid of the Micaius.
Mm-hmm.
Why does something like Graveborn Muse die? Because it had a Sword of Feast of Famine, so it had protection from black.
Ooh.
Let's play the clip.
Okay, I'm going to tap three.
Okay.
And then I will play Toxic Deluge. So all the creatures will die. And I'll go to 33.
So does anybody want to walk through how protection from a color works here?
There are three key points. Maybe we can all take one of them.
Usually protection from, it has to be like, isn't it also like a targeted type of thing?
Correct. Correct. So if you have protection from black, you cannot be targeted from black.
And if it's protection from black, that means you can't like be dealt, like if you block it with a card, right? It can't be dealt damage.
Right? Right. You cannot be dealt damage from anything of that color.
True. Yeah. Yep.
And then also, contrary to your point Jimmy just made, you cannot block.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So a creature. So if you have protection from black, a black creature cannot even be assigned as a blocker to the protection color. So those are the three main things. It does not, however, say anything about negative X that's untargeted, which is what Toxic Deluge is. So if Toxic Deluge said give target creature negative X, then protection from black would protect it.
Yeah.
But because it just does all creatures, then protection is like not working for it. Yep. Don't ask me why that's the way it is. That's just the way that
it is.
That's
just how it works.
It's been around for a while.
On the flip side, if you had like, say, a Blasphemous Act and something had pro red, it would stay alive because it's dealing damage to every creature and it has, you know, pro red. So
good point. Yeah. Really good.
So
point.
Pro black is a little hard to understand because there aren't direct damage effects like pingers and stuff that can be safe against.
On a related note, a lot of people asked why I was able to sacrifice my Scarab God to the Vishkal, even though Scarab God had protection from black.
Because you're a dirty cheater. Just like me and Craig. Join the Winners Club, Josh.
So Vishkal doesn't target when it sacrifices. It just says sacrifice a creature.
Yep.
So there's no targeting involved. So pro black doesn't have anything to do with it. Once again.
Yeah. Boom. Really important word, though. Target, right? If the word target is on there, a whole new set of things apply.
Right.
Toxic Deluge, as it turns out, actually just kind of a confusing card, I think, to a lot of people. So a lot of people were wondering when Toxic Deluge was played that same turn, you had Micaeus out. So Cruel Celebrant comes back with Undying.
Right.
And people were like, well, Toxic Deluge says all creatures get negative X until end of turn. Mm. So why doesn't Cruel Celebrant just immediately die again when it comes back if creatures are getting negative X until end of turn?
Right.
Again, we have a clip for it. So let's play the clip.
So, Cruel Celebrant triggers. Since I lost two creatures, everyone lose two life.
Bottoms up!
And I'll gain two life.
Okay.
And because Micaeus gave Cruel Celebrant Undying, it's gonna come back to the battlefield with a +1/+1 counter.
So it's a 2/3 now?
It's a 2/3.
Does anyone want to try and tackle this one?
I can.
Go for it.
Boom, get it.
All right, so Cruel Celebrant, it leaves the battlefield. Toxic Deluge has already happened. It's going to come back to the battlefield. Therefore, Toxic Deluge has already happened, and Cruel Celebrant, the new one, does not see that. Therefore, it is not affected.
Yeah. Well, it might. It might look around and just see a barren waste. Like, what happened? I just blinked.
Nothing smells. Yeah.
What
did I do now? Did I do this? I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's considered a new permanent when it's come back from the graveyard like that. So it's not the same permanent that it was. And Toxic Deluge, anything played after it's happened, doesn't get the effect. It is confusing, though, because it says not like an enchantment effect where it just persists constantly on the battlefield. It just, every creature that's out right now gets negative X, but anything that happens after that, it won't get it.
Yeah.
Right.
A card like Elesh Norn, if that was still out, it's a universal effect. It applies across the table.
Static ability just keeps happening.
Yeah. In fact, from Gatherer, and if you have rules questions, Gatherer will often answer like the most common ones. So I think the first thing listed on Gatherer, if you look up Toxic Deluge, is all creatures on the battlefield when Toxic Deluge resolves are affected. Ones that enter the battlefield or become creatures later in the turn are not.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yep.
Okay, this is another, it's sort of a stack related question. Yeah. So on that same turn, when Toxic Deluge gets played, two of your creatures, Ashlyn, die. So it's Mirror Retriever and Metalworker.
Yes.
And so, we have a clip here. Let's play the clip.
When my Mirror Retriever dies, that'll actually trigger, and I will get the Metalworker back to my hand.
Cool.
So a lot of people were asking, is that legal since they both died at the same time? Can the Mirror Retriever get the Metalworker back?
And, you know, when that happened, I actually asked, like, wait, doesn't it work like this? Like, can't I stack when they enter the graveyard? And so you can. And because I stack, I believe it was the, I had the metalworker die.
They both die at the same time.
Die at the same time. But they enter the graveyard, and I have the mirror retriever see the metalworker, essentially.
Yeah, but when they hit the graveyard, basically, the effect of mirror retriever goes up and says, hello, something happened, and you can look at the graveyard at that point. Both creatures have died. I want to take that one back. But that's the reason that the cards like Mirror Retriever and Junk Diver say another creature. Otherwise, it would die. The trigger would go on the second. If it said a creature, it could target itself and bring itself back. And that would just be
very
not
broken.
Good. Yeah, very broken. Very, very broken.
We actually have a behind-the-scenes clip. We don't do this very often, of us asking in the moment. We're sure that's how that works, right? Here, we can play that clip.
So there's a few things that are going
to
happen here.
I was about to say.
Mirror Retriever's going to trigger.
Can I order this and get my metal worker?
No.
Yes.
Can you?
Yeah, because it'll be dead at the time when the trigger. So right, they die. Trigger goes on
nice,
stack.
Nice. Okay.
Right.
Cool.
Right, Murph.
When the crypto check. When it does, targets. Yeah.
So they'll be in the graveyard at that point.
Okay. When my mirror retriever dies, that'll actually trigger, and I will get the metal worker back to my hand.
So we don't know everything. We use the internet as
yes.
well.
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out that magic is held together by like single words. You take
That's
one
true.
Out,
the
whole thing.
Another and not another, or non-land, or just permanent.
Yeah.
It's
oh
just
my.
Like huge,
oh my
right?
God.
May or not May, like, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. All right.
It's actually August, Josh. Okay. Moving forward, some people are like, Jimmy, you are on your way out the game. You have a Bolas's Citadel. This card is powerful. Why don't you use its second ability to maybe do some damage on the way out? And the second ability on this says, tap, sacrifice 10 non-land permanents. Each opponent loses 10 life.
Okay, that'll trigger my Cruel Celebrant. Everyone takes damage, and I gain a life, so I'll go to 36.
I'll go to 13.
I'll go to 36.
I'll go to 0. Bye, guys.
If you look at my board, I've got permanents and a bunch of lands, but not that many non-land permanents. So
I think you're at like 7 or 8.
Yeah,
it's like
it was close.
Close, but
I was like, wait, in my brain, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, Cruel Celebrant on the stack. He's counting his permanents real quick. He's like, crap, not enough non-lands. Otherwise, you definitely would have done it, right?
Oh, heck yeah.
I think I lose the game if you have 10.
I
because
think so,
it puts
too.
Me to like 4.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Darn.
So I'm glad.
You're welcome, Josh. I guess I don't know who to thank, really, and who to say you're welcome to.
You can say you're welcome to me.
Yeah, okay, sure. You're welcome.
All right, so those were the rules-based stuff that were sort of confusing to people. A lot of that is just weird magic ruling. You know, yeah. Magic rules are held together by duct tape. So let's move on here to what we're going to call the controversial decision-making points. So this is player choice stuff. This is not rules stuff per se. So the first one is land tax logic. Let's play the clip.
All right. I will untap, and on my upkeep, land tax is going to trigger, and I'll find a plains, a mountain, and a swamp.
Well,
I will put them into my hand, and then I will draw for turn. I will pass the turn, and because I have 9 cards in my hand, I will go to discard and discard 2 mountains.
There were a lot of people saying, you know, land tax says may on it, so you don't have to go find the lands. And a lot of people were like, well, if Jimmy, at the start, you're drawing the 3 lands, but you have too many cards because you can only play 1 land per turn at the discard phase, and you're having to discard lands every turn, so why are you choosing to get 3?
Well, the answer isn't deck thinning, for those asking, right? Getting a couple of extra lands out of your deck, it's not going to make a massive difference. For me, I'm just happy to draw the cards because, look, you always want to have a land drop every single turn. There is a chance that you're going to be able to play more cards out of your hand, so you don't have to discard. And even if you do, I knew how many basic lands were in the deck in general. I know I'm not going to run out of those colors. And so I'm just going to draw the 3 cards. And maybe it does have a tiny statistical difference later on when I play a Bolas's Citadel and hope there's not a land on top of my deck. But it didn't happen.
Maybe. I mean, I think when it costs you nothing like that,
right.
Then deck thinning is like worth it. Even if it's like a 0.05% difference,
right.
It is still better than not doing it to just be like, hey, listen, I'm not worried about hitting land drops now. So I may as well try and make it so that I have the less chance of drawing a land later.
Yeah, and like your deck might have some delve abilities. I'm playing black. There is a reanimate. It might, you know, there's like cards that affect the graveyard. So putting things in the bin isn't necessarily a bad thing. Even though you can't get lands back with reanimate, I'm just saying. Discarding is fine. Because I could have discarded a creature instead of a land, right?
Yeah.
That, and when you have different types of decks, especially ones that care about like what's in your hand with Kalia and everything, like being able to manipulate even little things like that can make a difference later on.
Mm-hmm. And a very popular combo is Kalia and that 3 white-white angel that brings a creature back, too. So, you know, having the chance to discard is a good idea.
Also, you don't know if somebody's got things like Windfall, Winds of Change, things that are going to,
Oh, right.
You know, where you'd much rather just have seven cards in your hand than not at those moments.
Yeah. Although I will say I probably should only discard lands because you're playing Scarab God deck. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Also, you could have had Crucible Worlds.
I could have had a lot of things in that game. If it just wins in the land on top. Okay.
Let's talk about, yeah, this is maybe one of the biggest moments in the whole game.
This is one of the biggest moments of my Magic career. I've never seen this happen so many times. Joseph, apparently you know this and we don't, but Soren has a plus ability.
What?
Josh, you hurt me. You really did. I mean, you blew up all my creatures. You hit me with the Sword of Feast and Famine, made me discard a card, blew up all my synergies. There's only one place that this Soren is gonna go, and that's at you.
Okay.
Ruh-roh.
Activate Soren. I'm just gonna uptick.
Oh, you're gonna uptick?
I'm gonna uptick.
Huh? What? Wait, you're gonna plus Soren? I've never even seen that ability used before.
Like, I'm just gonna downtick Soren and send somebody's life to 10. Come on now, I got a little more respect than that.
I'm not kidding. I think it's the same for Josh. I've literally never seen that ability used once. Joe, explain your thinking.
I was trying to take your turn. I was gonna plus him up and hopefully everyone would leave him alone and like, oh, he's not being mean to us. He's not gonna minus Soren. He wouldn't do that to us. And I'm like, nope, I sure wouldn't. But I would love to minus 7 and take your turn.
You got pretty close, to be honest.
I did, yeah, I got the 5 and I was like, one more turn.
But it's just so hard. It's so hard to ultimate planeswalkers in this game. Now, considering how the rest of the game turned down, I get knocked out when you minus him. Josh manages to crawl his way back in at the last second. Do you regret your decisions, Joseph?
I do regret letting the blue player go wild. That's usually a no-no in all EDH circles, so yeah.
So do you, if you had it to do over again, would you set my life total to 100%. 10 there?
100%.
Maybe I would have done
this. Oh, yeah.
All right, you're never coming back on Game Next. This is a thank you for...
You know, honestly...
thank you for coming back.
Yeah. You know, honestly, I will say this, and this is a little hidden fact here. I played Deflecting Swat in that game. I was really hoping to play that Deflecting Swat if it was used on me.
Yeah,
and pointed at you.
Yeah. We were talking about that. I was like, oh, man, the Deflecting Swat would have been so good if you just had either your commander out or, you know, could have, like...
Or just the mana. Oh,
just the way that the game turned out, you never had that... Oh, the ability to leave it the mana up or have your commander
out.
Yeah.
Oh, but I still did end up kind of using it on you. So, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Yep.
So here's a question a lot of people ask Jimmy. It's got a fairly simple answer, but on the turn you play Bolas's Citadel, well, we have a clip here. Let's play the clip.
You know what, Josh? I'm going to swing at you, but with the worst Kalia.
Okay, I will take 3 and I will go to 23.
Okay. And then that's going to be it for me. I'll pass turn to you, Ashlyn.
All right.
So you look around and then you attack me with new Kalia.
Yep.
Not your commander, but the other Kalia. And everyone's like, Jimmy, Soren's at 5 loyalty. If you hit Soren, it goes to 2 loyalty and Joe cannot minus and set your life total to 10. Were you thinking? Why didn't you attack Soren?
What a point. That is neither great or necessarily wrong.
It is wrong.
There is a blocker in the way. It's called Joseph's Commander and it's very massive.
Yes.
And it will destroy anything that swings at it.
It's a 5/5 flying life linker. I think people forget Vishkal's got flying.
Right? I was about to say that. We notice that a lot. Like it has flying. It will block anything that flies. We can't get around it. Vishkal flies.
The guy is sitting, though, in his arms.
Yes.
That's why I think people don't think that it's got flying.
He's just hanging out, chilling in a chair. He's like, I see you up there.
Yeah.
I see you.
Yeah, if I need to, I will jump up.
Don't make me get up out of this chair. Levitate. I will.
We'll levitate this whole chair. Just grab you out the air.
There you go. You know, maybe if Joe forgot that Vishkal had flying, I'd be like, Joe, I'm not going to swing at your Soren. I'm going to swing at Josh, so don't use the minus ability on me, right? Maybe that would have happened.
Struck a deal.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, next up, we're going to talk about the moment where Jimmy almost wins the game. Yes, Jimmy was very, very close as well. I think a lot of people missed that. But before we lay that all out there, we're going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move.
Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Do you follow automotive news? Or do you just like cars and want to see what the heck's going on? Well, then you might like Donut Media's new podcast, The Big Three. Hi, I'm James Pumphrey, and every week, me and my co-host slash two of my top five friends, Nolan Sykes and Joe Weber, unpack the latest and greatest in automotive news and trends on The Big Three. You'll also get a lot of laughs, hot takes, and personal insight on cars from the biggest car guys in automotive media. So, whether you're a hardcore enthusiast or just a person who goes, that's a good looking car, check out The Big Three, available wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch the full videos at Donut Podcasts on YouTube.
All right, we are back with more Roundtable with our wonderful guests, Joe and Ashlyn, and we are talking about Game Nights 2XM. And
this is either going to be your favorite part of the show or your least favorite part of the show.
I mean, it's kind of my favorite part, but it's also my least favorite because it was, gosh, it was so close. The glory was right there. So, Josh, you want to tee it up?
Okay, so, well, we have a clip. So this is the clip that has to do with Jimmy almost winning the game.
I'll go ahead and look at the top card in my library, see if I can cast it right now. I cannot, so I'll put that back on top.
Oh, man.
Yes! So I look at the top card in my library, and it's a land. I already played my land for turn. Can't do anything with that. Now I kind of just stuck in the water and have to wait a whole turn cycle to maybe try it again.
All right, so you play Bolas the Citadel.
Tapping out, by the way.
Tapping out, and you look, and you find a land on top.
Oh...
So here's the thing we were talking about, the, you know, for weeks while we've been working on it. It's like, what if there's not a land on top right there? By the way, we know that Bolas the Citadel allows you to play lands. Jimmy had already played his land for a turn, so he couldn't.
So I could play Bolas the Citadel. Yeah. Six mana. I was at five, I believe.
Yeah, so he couldn't play the land that was on top of his deck. But let's just say there's like four demons or angels there, and you just go boom, 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 which you are incentivized to do because you know Soren's out, so you want to get as close to 10 as you can get, right?
Even below 10, then in which case he pushes me up like Colo. No, that wouldn't happen either.
But if you just go like demon, angel, dragon, demon, you know, or even just two, really, but let's just say, then I mean, you just run away with the game at that point, because there's no more board wipes until the very, very end when I tutor for one. So there's that almost winning the game.
Yeah, the main thing that I would have been afraid of is a Bosch activation, yeah. Right? A boulder being thrown at my face. You have, I mean, or like another cruel celebrant coming on the battlefield, but ideally I would have the time to, because the board was very clear at that point.
Yep.
But we do know what my next two cards are because I ended up playing them.
Which makes it even
worse. Makes it way worse. The first is the Groovy Dancing Rakdos. We'll talk about that later. And the next card after that was Sensei's Divining Top. And this card is one of the most busted cards you can play with Bolas's Citadel. Because you can basically go through your entire deck one life at a time doing this. Mm-hmm. So the reason that Sensei's Divining Top is really powerful is that it has an ability to tap itself and draw a card, and then you put the top back on the top of your library. So with Bolas's Citadel out, you have the top on the battlefield, you look what the top card is. Oh, it's a land? No problem. I'm going to tap my Sensei's Divining Top, I'm going to draw the card off my library, so it's a land, the top goes back on top, and then I can replay the top from Bolas's Citadel for one life. That goes back on the battlefield, I look at the top card of my library. And now, if I have extra mana, I can use the top to readjust them. Otherwise, I can just literally, for one life, continue to draw my deck over, over and over and over and over again, find the right cards to put on top. If it's even a card I don't want to cast, pay one life, cycle it out with the Sensei's Divining Top, and that pretty much would have guaranteed I could play anything I wanted.
Plus, top has the ability to just change the top three cards also. So there's like a bunch of different ways. Basically, in that scenario, you're just going to cast about 25 life worth of stuff.
Right. And I would have found something that probably would have stopped Ashlyn, right? Because again, it's one life per card. I had something like 20, 30 or something at that point.
Oh, you're above 30. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was at 38. Yeah.
Yep.
So that means I could have technically drawn 37 cards off the top of my library. Of course, I wouldn't have done that because you have to, of course, pay to cast the cards as well. But I also had mana open in that case if I had it, right? So I could have drawn it, put it into my hand, and cast it from my hand. There's always, you just have so many options with these two cards. It's a very busted combo.
Yeah, so if land's not on top of your library when you play Bolas's Citadel, and instead it's Rakdos, then top.
Yep, which six life for Rakdos, easy, no problem. And then top, and then I'm off to the races.
Yeah, I think we absolutely lose in that scenario.
Yes.
So, having said all that, Joe, and having said you regretted not setting me to 10 life, now knowing about the Sensei's Divining Top thing, do you now actually feel justified in what you ended up actually doing because you saved us with the negative 3 ability to Jimmy? Because if Jimmy's at 38, when it gets back around to his turn, he's in this scenario with Rakdos and Sensei's Divining Top.
That's true.
Danger,
okay.
Will Robinson.
Yeah.
I like Pass Joe. Pass Joe, you did a good job.
We're just flip-flopping all over.
Go back. I will go back in time and congratulate Pass Joe. It's fine. Thanks, Pass Joe.
Like, no, Joe, no!
I'm like the fairy, just running around. Just a bunch of me's.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to discuss here, too, in terms of, like, why did I play the Citadel? I could have replayed the Kali at that point.
We know you
know
Terra
I have.
Things.
Yeah, Terra, and not that shit. I also have an Avacyn in my hand, so like maybe I try to get that on the battlefield. I think I just felt that the timer was going very quickly at that point, and that I knew that I was going to force the hand of the Sorin, so I was just hoping to have a really sweet run of cards with the Citadel.
Yeah, because like we said, if you play Citadel and get lucky, two or three cards on top are good, then...
That's a huge... And then even then, right,
and like then
now
you don't
I'm
care
down
so
like
much
15 life and I go to 10. Yeah, not a big deal.
He probably won't even use it on you because it's not even worth it, right?
Yeah.
To just do 5 damage to you. Yeah. So, yeah. When you got Sorin'd, Jimmy, after Bolas's Citadel whiffs, it's hard to explain how... That's like Hermit Druid unlucky to get the land on top there, I think. And then he Sorin's you down to 10. What was your mindset there? Were you like, okay, it's kind of over at this point?
I did feel like the game was going to end. Yeah, I was just like, ah, and that's it for me. Bye, friends.
It kind of feels like that on your turn where you're like, whatever, I'm going to play the Rakdos and whatever. Do you think, looking back now, you maybe should have played a little more defensively and try to stay in it? Or
I mean, like...
Is that not your style?
Kalia, it's definitely not my style. No. And Kalia's just one of those decks where I want to get in there and want people really quickly. So, I mean, for me, I was just like... In general, too, on game nights, I like to play fast because either I'm going to win fast or lose fast, and I'm okay with either of those. I mean, it might make things exciting, too. And I need some more excitement in my
life. I will
say
Rakdos brought a lot of fun to the table in and of itself.
True,
so.
And the animation extra did that.
Yeah.
So. We'll talk about that later. I'm glad you played Rakdos. And I think everybody out there is too. Yeah. Okay, so speaking of Rakdos, when Rakdos comes out, has its effect, we all roll the dice, lose some creatures. Joe, you lose Vishkal in that moment, and you end up choosing to put Vishkal into the graveyard.
Oops.
A very important choice.
Yeah.
All right, so after the dust settles, the board looks like this.
Oh, geez.
Okay. I'm actually going to put Vishkal in the graveyard.
let me first of all say, I think there were some people confused that that is a legal play.
Yeah.
You can always choose to just let your commander go where it's supposed to go, or you can choose to put it into the command zone. Joe chose to keep it in the graveyard on purpose. It wasn't like he wanted the trigger from Cruel Celebrant. You were going to get that anyway.
Right.
Because this was after the rule change and everything. So do you want to explain your thinking or what was going on? What, there was a card that you had that was kind of important at that moment for why you made this play?
Mm-hmm. I had a Twilight's Call in my hand, which can bring all creatures from my graveyard or for every graveyard back into play, which would have assembled the combo, which would have...
instantly
got
me won
the game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was banking on that hardcore. And, yeah, I bet wrong.
Were you at all worried at that moment? Like, hey, Scarab God might reanimate this before I have a chance to reanimate it?
At the moment, I thought you had other targets that you were more focused on. So I was like, okay, maybe he's not going to focus on Vishkal because it's not really his style. And then, yeah, it came out. And
well, I think what actually happened is I made you discard Sword of Feast and Famine. With Sword, oh, of,
with
and
Sword of Feast and Famine. And then I was just like, well, then, now yeah, I can't get it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was the thing that kind of thwarted your plans.
Right, so, yeah. No, plans were thwarted.
Good old Scarab God.
Okay, let's talk about the moment, Jimmy, when you get knocked out.
Yep.
So
Bloodline Keeper.
Yeah, so Hellkite Tyrant. Well, there's a few things about the Hellkite Tyrant. We'll get to that in a second, Ashlyn. But you, Ashlyn swings Hellkite Tyrant at you, Joe,
mm-hmm.
and you decide to block with the Bloodline Keeper. Specifically to kill Jimmy, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah.
Because
with Cruel Celebrant, Bloodline Keeper's going to die. The one damage Jimmy's at one is going to take him out. In fact, we have a clip. Let's play that clip.
And I will send Hellkite Tyrant at you, Joe.
All right. I will block with my Bloodline Keeper.
Bloodline Keeper dies.
And then four damage will trample over.
I'll go 35. Okay, that'll trigger my Cruel Celebrant.
Ooh, gosh.
Everyone takes damage, and I gain a life, so I'll go to 36.
I'll go to 13.
I'll go to 36.
I'll go to 0.
So do you want to walk through your thinking in that moment? Because I think there were some people who were like, oh, I might take the damage from Hellkite Tyrant since it's got trample anyway.
Right. True.
And leave Jimmy alive because you can sacrifice stuff at any time to the Phyrexian Altar.
That's true. I mean, in that moment, I thought that maybe he could have drawn something else and taken... you know, us for another loop. So I was like, I'm not even trying to bank on it. Let me get him out of the game, because if he has an upkeep and he gets to untap, who knows?
Right.
We could be all messed up. So I was just, you know, kind of hoping that no one else would swing at me after that. Like, my defenses are down. I'm dead.
I mean, to be fair, like, you're playing a deck full of angels. There, you mm-hmm. could very well, like, get back up from...
And I had enough mana to cast Kalia probably at that point and equip the Greaves on, and we know I have Avacyn, right? So even at one life, I could have been dangerous, even if you did sort of hold me by a thread, yes, because of that Cruel Celebrant.
Right.
Which sucks.
You're also playing white, so you have a lot of exile stuff, so I was just banking on the fact that you couldn't make me exile my board, and then I would have been even... in more deep trouble.
That was the real card I was looking for before I got to one life, was like, can I find my path to exile that gains me some life? Mm. Path my own creature?
Or swords,
swords, yeah. Swords, yeah.
Swords,
yeah. 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 Yeah, that would
have been awesome. Swords, Eurectus.
Oh,
yeah. He would dance on the way out, too.
I think there's something to be said, too, for the fact that I'm playing Scarab God, so turning off Jimmy, just getting rid of him, gets rid of his graveyard.
Oh, very potent graveyard.
Yeah, yes. And we know he had Runescar Demon in there, yep. And some, you know, some stuff I might want to get a hold of. So
a lot of toys.
Denying me access to that, maybe a good idea. All right, so let's talk about a big one here. A lot of people, this is kind of a big, maybe turning point in the game, Ashlyn.
Yes.
So you have Hellkite Tyrant. This is the moment where you're deciding who to swing at. Jimmy's at one.
Yes.
So you're not going to swing at him because you'll kill him and any artifacts you steal won't matter. Mm-hmm. And well, we have a clip here. Let's see what you decide to do.
So, do I want to attack anyone? This is a pretty easy calculation for me. Jimmy's about to die, so I don't want any of his things. Josh only has two artifacts, and Joe has three. Three is bigger than two. I'm going with three.
Aha!
So you steal all of Joe's artifacts, decide to swing at Joe, and...
I do.
Yeah, there's a lot of comments about this moment. You know, a lot of people thinking maybe you should have swung at me and mm-hmm. stolen my Sword of Feast and Famine and Fellwar Stone. Mm-hmm. From Joe, I think you get Sol Ring, Arcane Signet, and Phyrexian Altar.
Yes.
So, in the interview, you say three is more than two. I'm going to swing at Joe.
For three.
Yeah.
So, looking back at it, there was definitely like, yes, I could have swung at you. I could have turned off your sword. I think at the time when I did this, one, I had already been like trying to calculate, I'm going to kill, or Jimmy's going to die soon. So if I take his artifacts, I'm not going to have them.
Correct.
Your life total was already getting pretty low.
Yeah.
And if I stole your artifacts and you died after that, and then I have to go off against Joe, I lose those artifacts as well.
Right. And I think if you hit me with Hellkai Tyrant there, I go to 7.
Yes.
So you pretty much are going to kill me with, you know,
with a Bosch activation. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I picked Joe. And I mean, I also kind of got a little tunnel vision because I thought it would be cool to have 20 artifacts and win that way. Not gonna lie, I was definitely like going up there with that. So that also slightly influenced the choice.
I mean, and let's be honest, that line of like, I'm going to hit Joe so I can take his artifacts because I'm more likely to keep them than I'll concentrate on killing Josh first.
Yeah.
Which was clearly what you decided to do. Yes. As soon as you hit Joe, you're like, I'm killing Josh now. Almost worked. It came within a hair of not working.
Yeah, let's not forget that Ashlyn almost won the entire thing at that point, that Bosch activation.
Basically one card.
One card.
Yeah. One card.
So, yeah, okay. So, looking back, would you do it differently now?
No.
You think you'd make the same play?
I think I would have still made the same
three
play.
Three is more than two, Josh. Yeah.
Three is definitely
three
more,
is
than two.
More than two.
Yeah, you want to talk about this next one? Scarab God is a card that I think is so powerful. And there's actually even more intricacy to it that Josh missed a small thing here that could have made the difference.
Yeah, so at the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses X life and you scry X, where X is the number of zombies you control. So I have an upkeep where this triggers and I actually say I have no zombies and do nothing. In fact, we have a clip. We'll play the clip.
Okay, I am going to untap. Scarab God will trigger on my upkeep. But I have zero zombies, so it doesn't do anything. And I will draw.
Okay, here's the thing. You can activate Scarab God in response to its own trigger to bring creatures out of the graveyard so you'll have zombies. So I just kind of gave up free value there because I just go to my main phase and then do it. It's like, oh, I might as well have activated and gotten Vishkal, Machias, and stuff during my upkeep. Then I could have scryed, found better cards done damage to my opponents. So yeah, definitely a misplay there on my part.
Yeah, it's a small one. I don't think it ultimately ended up mattering, but it's something that's cool for Scarab God players just to know that, you know, in your upkeep, it's a great time to respond to a trigger.
Yeah, I hate missing stuff like that because it like misrepresents to people, to everybody watching, like other cool things you could have done. So I apologize to all the Scarab God players out there.
That's why we have a round table to talk about.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The next one is sort of the big turning point in the game. So this is when Ashlyn has played Bosch. It's on the stack. I think at the moment I'm at 8 life, but I end up going a lot lower because I have to sack creatures to draw cards.
Yes.
Basically, as soon as Bosch resolves,
you dead.
You will be able to activate it, sacrifice, you know, something, and kill me. And so I'm like, crap, before Bosch resolves, I need to find an answer. And in my mind, I'm like, I have to find a counterspell to counter Bosch so it never enters the battlefield.
Yep.
So what I end up finding, though, is Lazotep Plating, which I wasn't even thinking of as a possible way to save me. And as somebody pointed out, going through my list, that was actually, by the time I got down to the last activation, the only card left in the deck that would save me because I didn't have a counterspell that only cost one blue.
Right.
Mm. So I didn't have the ability.
Right, mana, yeah.
Yeah, so on my last activation, Lazotep Plating is the literal only card I can draw. So, yeah, sorry, Ash.
It's okay. I mean, you can't control it. Yeah. It definitely, like, feels bad, but it's also like, well, you played your out, so, like... Yeah.
Anybody who thinks we script the game, just watch Ashlyn's reaction in the moment. There's no way she would have let me, like, hey, Ashlyn, I'm going to find the perfect card. Is that okay with you? She wouldn't, like... Yeah, no, I would have, like, red marks all around my neck if that happened.
Let's talk about going to Vegas, though. Yeah. Gosh, the odds. My goodness.
I mean, I did draw, like, 3 or 4 cards that turn, so, you know, it's better than just one shot.
Okay. You roll the dice a lot, too. Okay, all right.
So, people got confused, I think, here about the order of events, and I think this is really one where maybe we didn't explain it great in the episode. We tried to in your interview. In fact, we have a clip here. Let's play the clip of how we presented it.
I wasn't even thinking of this as a possible answer, but I think this saves me. Remember, I have the 4 mana from Suchi when it died, floating. I'll add a blue.
Okay.
And I will cast Lazotep Plating. Me and permanents I control gain hexproof until end of turn.
Oh!
Got him, coach.
That will amass 1, so I make a 1/1 zombie.
Oh, this is horrible. It's not a counterspell, but this card does give Josh and his permanents hexproof. And this is all before my commander has hit the board. So by the time Bosch arrives, I'm not going to be able to target Josh.
And then Bosch resolves.
All right, Bosch is here.
which comes into play tapped because of Blind Obedience.
Okay, and then I will go ahead and play Geode Golem.
Okay.
And I pay one for Rhystic Study. And yeah, that's my turn. Go ahead, Josh. So you're probably thinking, Ashlyn, wait, why are you tapping out? You could kill him with Bosch on his upkeep. I could if it wasn't for Vishkal and all those counters on him.
So I think what was confusing is because people were all in the comments being like, no, she can, in his upkeep, just activate Bosch and kill him, right? Because he's only hexproof for the until end of turn, which is her turn. So once her turn's over, he can do that. And what happened was I end up destroying Bosch during her end step so that she doesn't even have Bosch during my turn. So she cannot then use it during the upkeep. And the thing is, Ashlyn saw that I was going to be able to do that because Bosch was a 16-16. And so she decided there's no point in leaving up the mana. I'd rather just play a card out of my hand, which is why she plays the Geode Golem.
Yeah.
So it's like everybody saw three chess moves ahead and was playing based on those three chess moves.
Let's talk about Vishkal being a big old
Vishkal,
boy.
Vishkal, 16. Ooh. Oh my gosh.
Well, this is the interesting thing and the misplay that I made in the moment, which is that considering that you did decide to tap out and play the Geode Golem, I didn't actually need to destroy Bosch during the end step because you didn't have any mana left.
Okay, on your end step, I'm going to remove the 12 counters from Vishkal and give Bosch negative 12, negative 12.
Bye, Bosch.
Bye, Bosch.
So what I could have done is untapped, attacked with him, gained a bunch of life, and then killed the Bosch.
Right.
But I was so stuck in the, I got to kill Bosch, I got to kill Bosch mode, that I just still pulled the trigger. So considering that, it's really interesting, the three moves ahead chess thing. Considering that, do you think it maybe would have been better for you to not play the Geode Golem, which would then force me to remove the counters from...
So Josh made the misplay, and had Ashlyn not cast the Geode Golem, she would have had the mana to force him to do...
What he did anyway.
Right.
But not knowing that I was going to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting thought experiment. I'm not sure.
Honestly, I don't know. I think at the time, like after you got the plating... I kind of was already like, all right, it's game over. That was kind of where my head was. I tried, I mean, I don't know if I would have done anything differently. I don't think I saw it.
Yeah, it's just an interesting thing to think about. I'm not sure. I obviously made the misplay, so would I have done something differently? Yes, but, you know.
True.
Okay, let's, those are sort of the big controversial moments that people talked about in the comments, but I think what's interesting is, and I have a moment like this, there's stuff that maybe we notice as players during the game that aren't mentioned by the commenters that just kind of go by. And, you know, in the editing booth, we're always like, you know, after the episode comes out and reading the comments, it's funny, no one's talking about this or no one's talking about that. So I wanted to ask you each, what do you think was the biggest mistake you made in the game? Or was there a decision point where, knowing what you know now, you would go back and do it differently?
I'll start.
Okay, Jimmy.
There are a couple of things here that I think were things that I could have done better. The first off is, I think, immediately addressing the fact that Training Grounds is on the table and forcing the fact into everyone's brain that this is not only the best card in Josh's deck, but is going to allow him to come back really hard, right? At one point, I'm even like, full grip, and Josh is like, yeah, I've caught back up. And then at that point, it should have been like, Josh is on equal footing with the other players, especially if he's going to play a card like that. That's going to give him so much advantage over the long term. And how many times did you end up activating Scared Buddy?
A lot. Right? Seven, eight, nine?
Yeah, that's 16 mana that's saved off of Training Grounds off of that alone. So I think that was a big mistake in terms of like table politics. In terms of my own play, I think I probably could have found a better card with Runescarred Demon. I did end up finding Deflecting Swat. And sometimes you do find, right? Like, you know, looking through my deck list, I'm sure there could have been something else that maybe was a little more forward thinking to think like, all right, how is the rest of this game going to play out, not just the next three or four turns. But regardless, that's the card I got. I wanted to get someone with it, wanted to play a new card, so I kind of got laser focused on that. So maybe that was a mistake there.
Interesting. Joe, do you have a moment that you think in the game that you would redo if you had a chance?
Yeah, actually the top of the game, I think I Enlightened Tutored for a Soul Ring when I probably should have gone for something like a Phyrexian Arena, just something to keep, you know, cards in my hand so I always had gas. I think I ended up running out of gas way too fast and was relying on top decks. And I think that would have gotten me out of that.
Yeah, because you ran out of gas somewhere around like turn seven and weren't able to really affect the game a lot after that point. And maybe if you just have three or four more cards,
well,
that'd be a big
that.
Difference in that game, right? And hit your land drops.
Yeah, because my land tax stopped triggering after the land five.
So. Right.
Yeah.
So maybe you just, that could totally change the game. Because if you just hit two more lands, that's interesting. Ashlyn, do you have a moment?
I thought about this for a while, and like I thought about the Tyrant and that possibly being it, but I actually think that my biggest play mistake was
playing the Immortal Sun.
Oh, because you turned off Soren that he was probably going to use against me?
Because I turned off Soren. And because I hit you with Hellkite Tyrant, at the time, none of us really realized how much you were relying on those artifacts for mana until I took them. because of that, you were like, I completely, like, essentially took you out of the game in one turn. I, like, play Immortal Sun, hit you with the Tyrant, and then you just kind of...
That's your entire board.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Hi, welcome to Game Nights.
Sounds like you feel bad about it.
Just a little. Yeah.
Oh, Ashlyn does have a soul.
It's called six.
Wow. Just a little one.
Yeah, don't counter my stuff, Ashlyn, please.
So I actually feel like the Immortal Sun may have gotten blinded by all the yummy things it comes with and not relying more on my teammate at the time, possible teammate,
right.
To help pick out Josh.
To the training grounds thing I said, right? Like, maybe had that been a lot more clear, you guys could have looked at each other and been like, oh, Josh about to do one of them Josh things.
Yeah, let's time to team up.
Yeah.
I have one, and a few people mentioned in the comments, but not very many. And the Lazotep Plating, I actually misplayed the moment, right? Because that's a card that I could use in response to Bosch being activated. So what I should have done is played it cool, drawn the card, and been like, oh, crap. Too bad. Okay, it resolves. And then you activate Bosch, sacrifice probably, you know, something anyway. And then I can Lazotep Plating in response to that, and now I don't even have to necessarily kill Bosch,
right?
And I can just keep my Vishkala to 16/16.
Yeah, Ashlyn can't even play another card out of her hand, right?
No. Yeah, and I get to basically counter the ability on Bosch. Hmm. So that was a mistake on my part. Didn't end up biting me, but
could have
definitely.
As we know, magic is a word that is completely untied by a single word, so moments like this, you never know. Yeah, there was a lot of people in the comments talking about the card that's sitting behind us here on set.
Oh, yeah,
like
in the window.
Cyclonic Rift. And people were like, again, another Cyclonic Rift at the end of the game.
People are mad at
barf.
They're mad at me for playing that card.
By the way, it's in 2XM, so I think it's fitting that the card is
is played,
yeah.
I mean, I think, like, in this instant, people were talking about Cyclonic Rift like it won that game.
Mm-hmm.
And Cyclonic Rift did not win that game. Like, I Vampiric Tutor for Cyclonic Rift at the end there. There's 10 cards in my deck I could tutor for right there, or that I could have put in the deck instead, right? Time Stretch, Expropriate, in Garrick's Wake. Like, you can just go through a million cards that in that position would have won the game, because the game was already basically over. Cyclonic Rift just put it on ice,
mm-hmm.
right? So anything that kills all creatures just wins the game right there.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, kills my opponent's creatures.
Right.
Yeah. So, I get it. Cyclonic Rift, you know, but it didn't win the game there. Scarab God and Training Grounds won the game.
100%.
Yeah.
And Vishkala.
Yep.
Vishkala.
Vishkala, yeah. MVP.
Vishkala.
MVP.
That card's crazy. I've never had a Vishkala on my battlefield before. That card's nuts.
Yeah, I kind of want to make a Reanimator deck to get that sucker out, because it is a lot of mana for that guy.
All right, let's talk about something that a lot of people, in fact, this is actually the number one comment besides the...
No controversy here.
Yeah. It's... everybody noticed we really upped the animation game in this episode. The card animations were
amazing.
Well, yeah. In fact, you've hopefully seen them because you listened to our advice from earlier and you didn't watch this before watching the episode. But, you know, I don't think it hurts to watch them again. Let's play the clip.
Good stuff. Woo. Should we go around and say what are all our favorite animations were?
Okay, go ahead.
It was so hard to choose. I would probably go with Bolas the Citadel. I just love that pause and then that boom.
Yeah.
The sound design really makes it.
So good. Yes. Yes,
it's from Star Wars.
Yeah.
People figured it out.
I think my favorite was probably Soren. Just like the mist. And then him coming back
through,
I was like, oh, yeah, that's so vampire.
That is Soren.
So fitting.
Yeah.
We just kind of turned him into Dracula.
So clean.
Yeah. I love Micaeus. It's simple. It's easy. It's got a really dynamic feel as the whoom, the walls close in. Yeah. So I like that a lot. I think that added to the gravity of the card as well.
I liked Vishkal a lot because the whole environment had to be built and like it told a story, right?
Yeah.
It was like this line of creatures that are ready to be sacrificed. And they're all like, no, no. And he's like, next. He doesn't even care. Yeah. So really big kudos to Sam Waldo, who who does the animations. Also, we were able to bring on a VFX assistant named Patrick Nan, who helped a lot and also just gave Sam more time to concentrate on a lot of that more complicated stuff.
Yep.
Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah, big props to our whole team because Murph and Jake, who are editors on the show, spent a lot of time working with Sam to concept out like exactly what is happening or what needs to happen. Like the Vishkal thing, like Sam, for one, doesn't play Magic, so we're kind of explaining, you know, what can happen. And then it's a lot of this, like, what we wish could happen is this. Is that possible, Sam? And Sam's always like, that would be cool.
That would be,
yeah. And we're like, does that mean you can do it, or is that cool? How long will that take? Is it possible? He's like, I don't know. Let me go try and figure out if that is possible and how long it'll take. And so, yeah, big kudos to the whole team.
Should we talk about Disco Rack?
Yeah, because none of us says Disco Rack Disco.
That's a better way of doing it. Yeah, yeah. Just the boogie in.
Yeah, so the funny story about this one is that was Jake Boss's idea to have Rakdos, like, to have the disco ball come down and have him dance. So Jake's like, you know what would be cool? If we have some disco music and then Rakdos dances. And then Sam goes, that would be cool.
And Sam does.
Yeah, and so trying to figure that out is actually kind of hard because you got to have the thing move in a certain rhythm and whatever.
It's a lot of pieces moving to look like it. Otherwise, it's going to look janky, you know? It's hard to make someone look good dancing.
So I think Sam tried it a few times and just couldn't get the motion right and decided that, you know what we need? We need a reference video of somebody dancing that I can kind of match. And so he got Alfred with like a broomstick in place of the sickle or whatever.
Yeah.
And so we have this here, we'll play the video. It's Alfred, you know, doing the dance that Rakdos eventually does. It's pretty awesome.
This is not an uncommon technique in animation. No. You can go back and see all the way back to the old Disney days, and you know, they would have actual dancers in studio doing the whole thing, and then they would kind of basically copy and draw the movement because it's lifelike, it's realistic, and they add a little more flair, a little more whatever there.
I mean, mocap.
That's our next step for us. Yeah.
We just put some.
We'll be in dots models. Everywhere.
Yeah, get a Sharpie and that's how that works.
Are you guys sure this is how it works?
Oh, please let me be the one to Sharpie.
Do you have to use permanent marker? Yes, we do.
Yes, Josh.
I wanted to talk about something nobody noticed or very few people noticed. You know, we always are talking about the comments that everybody noticed.
Right.
But there was this really cool shot that Jake came up with when shooting the footage of the cards from Double Masters. So it's because Rico of Two Reflections is reprinted in this set. And Jake comes up with this sweet shot that's the reflection of Rico in the deck box.
In the satin tower.
Seeing himself. He's the reflection. Yeah. He's his reflection.
Yeah. I had to point that out.
So good. That was such a clean little shot. I was like, ooh.
Rico. Those things you do and you're like, that's clever. And then it's like, it's too clever. No one saw it. Yeah.
Like, you played Cyclonic Rift. Like, dude, the cool thing was in the first 2 minutes of the video. All right, fine.
All right, and the last thing we want to go out here is what I'm calling the Joe Me the Love section. Joe, first time on Game Nights. Man, the comments, so many. People loved you.
Absolutely.
I had such a great time. I mean,
it's like, what do I say to that?
I don't know.
Say thank you.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I mean, this is so awesome, and you guys made me feel welcome and right at home. So
yeah, and a lot of people notice that, again, you are an actor as well, and that's actually something that I thought was a great part that you brought to the interviews. Sometimes Josh and I have done so many of these, it's just like, and then this happened, and it was crazy. It's like, all right, what's the next line? There's a lot of these to get through, but you managed to bring a lot of life and tell like a story within the interviews too, and I'm sure the editors loved having that just because it adds so much flavor and stuff to the cut.
Yeah, I had a request for you, Joe.
Yeah.
Can you sing your famous Vishkal song?
Yes. Okay. Hold on, let me see if I remember it.
Hey.
What was it?
Dun. I just met you.
No, no, what? Wait.
Hey, I'm a vampire. I got some kind of, what?
What?
I got some vampire.
Hey, I'm a vampire.
And this is crazy.
This is crazy.
I got some counters. Bitch, call me, mate.
There it is. You found it.
Hey, I'm a vampire. And this is crazy. I've got some counters. Just call me, maybe.
You just made that up on the day. Like, you're like, hold on. I got this.
Yeah, amazing.
Joe, I think it's safe to say that we're going to hopefully be able to have you back at some point since you are local to LA. So that's pretty lucky for all of us.
Absolutely. Ashlyn as well, thank you so much for always being on the show and doing just awful things with colorless cards. Where can we find you guys online?
You can find me on Twitter at Ashlyn Rose. I'm on Instagram as RawItsAshlyn, and you can find my voiceover demos at AshlynRose.com.
They're impressive.
And you can find me on Instagram at BlackNito, and I'm on IMDb as Joseph H. Johnson Jr.
Nice. All right, Joe. Maybe we'll cast you in the next short film, too, that we do.
Hey, I'm down.
Yeah, if we ever figure out what we're going to do.
We figure that out.
We're doing a short now? Okay, cool. Yeah, Jimmy, why'd you say that?
I want to give a quick shout-out to Josh Murphy and Jake Boss, who are the main two editors on Game Nights. They do a terrific job, and you know, I think you can tell that our editing is just getting better and better, and it's really a testament to those two guys.
All right.
Jake, who's back there behind the cameras, also.
Oh, yeah. He's also helping doing the tech setup. Jake and I have been like troubleshooting all these things. We've come up with great solutions for a lot of stuff here.
Yeah. If you notice, like, our show looks better, like, Jake is actually handling cameras and stuff. We've been redoing our sound setup and everything. So, yeah.
Lots there.
All right. Big thanks to Card Kingdom for always supporting everything that we do. If you go to cardkingdom.com/commandzone and use that affiliate link when you order your magic products, singles, anything at all, you know, double masters, it's here.
Hello. It is.
If you want to get a hold of those cyclonic riffs so everyone can yell at you. It's never going to be cheaper than it is like for the next couple of weeks. Don't listen.
Don't miss out.
Listen, I know you hate the card. Get a couple of them though right now while they're cheap. Don't wait till they're $30 again.
Right. Yeah, you don't want that to happen.
Cardkingdom.com/commandzone.
And a massive, massive shout out as always to our patrons who get to watch Game Nights a day early. That means that they got the glory of Ish, Call Me Maybe and Joe on the show a day before the rest of the world. We're always very, very grateful. Grateful to them. They are, you know, the heart of our sort of area here, the command zone, literally. And without them, we wouldn't be able to push out all this content, especially during a time like this. So big thank you. You can check out the Patreon at patreon.com/commandzone.
And a big shout out to Ultra Pro, who also sponsors everything we do. You know that cool deck box that had the Riku reflection on it? That thing is sweet. There's also like a pearl one. Ooh. JK, yeah, you have like all the cool deck box, right? The pearl one? Yeah. Well, if you want a deck box that is so shiny that it can reflect Riku of two reflections on it, then Ultra Pro, they make the best in the business. They also make the best sleeves in the business to protect your decks. You don't want them to get messed up. You don't want to get that $10 Cyclonic Rift that's about to be $30, you know, messed up in any way. Put it in Eclipse sleeve.
And they also gave us the cool stuff to give away, like these planets in front of us will be going out to the winners of the Game Nights giveaway, and we've signed all of them. Pretty sweet. So look forward to that.
All right, Ashlyn, Joe, thank you so much for being here.
And we'll see you guys all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I Hyundai.com.